parental guidance is suggested.
Jude, Peter is lying on the bed, in his red stockings, waiting to pleasure you.
It's July 11th, 2009, and once again it's time for Tit Radio, the only show on Hacker Public Radio with super cow powers. Right after this.
What? What do you mean, get along? Why, you young whippersnapper? Oh, you young people think that Linus Torvalds invented the concepts of Linux. Why, I was programming shell scripts before you were born. Before your father was born. You should listen to Doug McElroy. He's the one who invented pipes and filters. He hired the programmers that invented Unix. And all you people could listen to him if you went to the Ohio Linux Fest in Columbus, Ohio, on September the 25th and 26th. You should also listen to Peter Salas. He'll be there, too, talking about many of the other innovations that the Unix people contributed. TCP/IP, security enhancements, and many more. Oh, don't worry. It won't just be a bunch of old farts like me sitting around. Elizabeth Garby will be there, talking about how her school system tried to make her use Microsoft, creating walls to her learning. Then she learned about free software. In a world without walls, who needs windows? What? You say you're ill? Well, I'm not so feeling so good myself. Oh, URL. I think it's something simple like www.ohiolinux.org. Be there or be square, as we always used to say. Well, I'm going to go back to sleep. I need my rest for the big festivities.
Hello and welcome to Tit Radio Episode 4. I'm Monster B, and with me at the round table is 330.
Hello.
Peter 64 with a J.
Howdy.
Klaatu.
Hello.
J. Lindsay.
Hello.
Azmuth.
Howdy, howdy.
Pegwall.
Hello.
And Art V61.
Howdy, howdy.
All right. We're live. Okay, should we spin the wheel and see who the sheriff is?
I think we better.
Yeah, because it's going to get out of control. Let me spin it.
I was going to say, we're going to need one tonight. I can tell.
Here we go.
May need two.
Deputy.
Peter, 64.
Ha ha. Where's Zeke when you need him? Where is Zeke? His mum and dad still in town.
Yeah.
Bugger. Art, you're in trouble.
Take a drink of water, Art.
For a fella.
Oh, you know what? I forgot. We have some feedback. Let me get this out of the way. It's from Seeker X.
Ooh.
It's a pretty cool name. He wants to know if there are any good open source music making programs, like Fruity Loops for Linux.
Oh, crap. I forget what it is.
Guitar Maker, tell us, surely. Adore and FTWT. What the hell's that? That's for the Win or something. And Wix something or other, Guitar Man says, and Guitar Man would know.
Wired.
Wired. Yeah. Oh, my God, that was painful, Guitar Man. Thanks, you got it out.
Okay, so Wired, and that's at wired.sourceforge.net. Still an active project. And then Ordore, and that's at ordore.org. There's another one called what's it called? Traverso? Klaatu, you would know.
I don't know the one you're talking about. What's it called?
Traverso?
Traverso. Never heard of that one.
I just looked it up. Just did a Google search on it. It says Traverso D8. It's a digital audio workstation. It looks similar to Audacity.
Yeah, Wired is looks pretty cool. I haven't used it, but if Guitar Man has and says it's cool, I'm sure he's right. My problem is I've never used Fruity Loops, but Renoise too, and that's for Mac, PC, and Linux.
So isn't a Hydrogen a drum synthesizer thing?
Yeah, but see, Fruity Loops is just loop based, as far as I know. So you don't really, as far as I know, there's not really much MIDI sequencing and stuff like that. You just stick in a whole bunch of loops after each other, and you know you can affect them and make them do different things. But it's all other people's loops. Which, you know, I mean, I've said before, I mean, you can go to any good music magazine. A lot of times they'll come with a DVD. If you get them off the shelf, they'll come with a DVD full of loops. And, you know, if you're into the music scene and you collect enough of those, you've got your own loop library right there. And you just throw it into, you know, any good music software, Ardour or Q-Tract or even Audacity, although that doesn't have some of the nicer sort of, you know, interfaces for looping. But, I mean, you can do it anywhere and achieve basically the same thing as you do with Fruity Loops.
And they could also look at a Jacocher. They wanted something that was, you know, kind of working, sometimes not really, and heavily influenced by Jono and that horrible beard.
Right. I haven't looked at Jacocher anytime recently. Has anyone else?
I used it a while back. It was all right.
I mean, I've heard it has gotten better, but I just, haven't really used it since the very initial versions. But yeah, that's not something that I would recommend yet, personally.
Well, another couple distros to try out, too, is 64 Studio and Ubuntu Studio. You could check those two distros out, and they have a bunch of tools in there, too.
Yeah, but you know what? One thing, I mean, really, a lot of people who are asking that kind of question, what they're really asking is there a disk that they can pop into their computer that'll have all the little sample libraries and all the loops and all the stuff that they need that they can kind of start plugging in things into a sequence and making music. And I don't think that there's a package like that for Linux that I'm aware of. You really kind of have to amass, like, the sound patches and the loops on your own. And from there, you can construct what you're trying to construct. Because a lot of the people who used Fruity Loops, from what I can recall, aren't the people who have their own synths or, you know, aren't going to be twiddling knobs on a drum machine. They're just people who want to use stuff that, you know, some DJ has recorded for you know, royalty-free and put it out there. So that kind of stuff on Linux, get it yourself. Just go to the store, get some sample CDs, and start using them. You just have to build it up yourself a little bit more than you do on, like, a PC or a Mac.
There's also the, I think it's called the Open Sound Project.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where there's all kinds of loops there.
Yeah.
Freesound.org, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, I knew that one. But, I mean, that one is, at least the exploration on that site that I've done, I haven't really been able to, like, kind of just do a search. Okay, I need, you know, a funky drum loop, you know, that is 8 bars or whatever. You know, it's hard to find exactly what you're looking for. Whereas if you go out and get, like, sample CDs, you will find the stuff organized exactly like that. You know, it'll tell you exactly what each loop is, where to find it on the disc, and then you just, you know, you dump it onto a hard drive, and you just have this big library full of different loops that you can just plug in and start mixing. But the Free Sound Project is cool, too. That's very cool.
All right. Anything else on this one? I have one more feedback. This is from Matthew. Says, I really like the show, but I don't see any difference between Tit Radio and the Linux Cranks. Why not just do Linux Cranks each week?
I actually thought they were a lot different.
Me too. Totally.
Yeah.
He obviously hasn't listened to them.
But he did
no sheriff on the Cranks.
Exactly. That's the big difference right there. It's lawless and artistic.
And what's the difference anyway, what it's called? If he's listening to Tit Radio, he can pretend it's Linux Cranks and if that makes him feel better. But anyway, it's good that he enjoys it. But I would have thought there's...
I don't even want to be a listener.
Well, Cranks
at least
is
no
all...
one has...
We talk about news, don't we?
Yeah.
And this, we're trying to be a little bit more interesting and cover a few different topics, I would have thought, but anyway.
At least no one's ever said, hey, your show makes me want to cut myself.
Except for you now.
Emailed.
You're in the bin. Put him in the bin.
Oh.
There's no cutting on this show.
Wow.
Tagwell,
no.
You're with the big boys now. 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
Wow.
Oh, the sheriff is out of control.
Yeah.
Well, Sheriff, you want to kick it off with your topic?
Come on.
Come on, big guy.
I think from now on, we should call him Kim Jong Peter.
It goes to my head. What can I say?
I think you need pills.
Yeah. I was just going to talk about a little-known program. Well, in general, I thought maybe talk about home automation on Linux. And I know if you go back through the Hacker Public Radio episodes, you're going to find Monster B. You, and I can never remember the bloke's name, interviewed the bloke from Windows Media Center.
Oh, yeah, Thomas.
Which has a, was a really good interview. And Linux Media Center has a lot of home automation stuff built into it. Also, then there was that other one where a bloke talked about home automation on Linux, but sort of very expensive. And the fact of the matter is not all of us have a hell of a lot of money to spend on this sort of stuff. But if you've got a few bucks to spare, especially in America, where the X10 stuff, and that's the stuff that HeyU deals with or can control, is extremely cheap. Now, HeyU is just a command line, a console-based application. You can get web interfaces for it, but personally, I've never bothered. All you have to do is buy what's called a CM12, which is the computer interface module. It also can control another thing called a firecracker, which is a radio frequency transmitter. And the way X10 works is you have a receiver plugged into a wall socket. It gets the radio frequencies signal from either a remote control or this firecracker or whatever, and then is broadcast across the power lines to all the other modules in your house. Now, it's a brilliant little program. I mean, like I said, it's just command-based. That's all you need. And it's as simple as typing. Now, first of all, this was written by a fellow called Charles W. Sullivan and Daniel B. Southers. I'll give Monster B the web thing to put in the show notes. It's certainly what I've been using for the last, 3 or 4 years to do my home automation. And typically, you can just use your basic commands like each of your light switches or your appliance modules or lighting lamp modules, etc., you're given address to. Now, they use the alphanumeric system where you've got, you can use A through P and then 1 through 16. So that gives you roughly 256 combinations that, of modules you can have in your house, which is more than adequate for anyone. And it's simply a matter of on the command line typing, hey, you on, and then it might be A1 if the lights on your veranda are called A1, or you can use aliases. You can set up aliases and say veranda. Simply a matter of typing, hey, you on veranda. And you can do all, depending on the actual module that's controlling the lights, you might like to dim it and all that sort of stuff. It's extremely configurable. You can use all different scripts. What you can do is it sits there waiting. Then you might set up a script. So when you send, say, the house code A16, then HeyU listens for that, and that will trigger some form of script. And the script can be like I've wrote a few bash scripts that just perform numerous functions all in a row. The other thing it can do is launch anything on the command line as well. And often, instead of, like in the afternoon, instead of going through and closing all the curtains and the blinds and turning on all the lights in the house and maybe dimming them, I just have a simple script in there that off it goes. And as soon as I hit the HeyU A16, then it starts to run the script. It also uses Festival to play text files that I've also put on the computer, which is more or less just for a bit of fun. Something to the effect of,
good evening, Mr. and Mrs. Cross. For your convenience, I am about to initiate the linking sequence. Close the blinds and curtains. I do so hope you enjoy your evening.
So when we have people over, people really get a giggle out of that sort of stuff, and I often just change it to say their name and etc. like that. Now, the other things you can do is you can set up scenes. And once again, it's pretty similar. You might want, say, when we're about to watch TV, I just set up a scene called Romance. And as soon as I type, hey, you romance, then off it goes, which will then close up all the curtains and blinds. It turns all the mood lights on. It will turn the lounge room lights on and dim them to 50%. And it'll launch the Mythbox. So you know, it really is a versatile.
Dude, Peter is lying on the bed in his red stockings, waiting to pleasure you.
Oh, shit. Forget that one. That wasn't supposed to play. Stupid machine. Once again, can you cut that out, please? Anyway, so this all integrates really well with the X10 stuff. And X10 is cheap. It certainly, when you start looking at stuff like...
Hey, Mayor, I think you ought to go into a bin for that.
That wasn't me. That was that rotten computer. I'll be having a word to it after. But anyway, once you get into, like, obviously the C-Wave and C-Bus, you're starting to spend thousands of dollars on your house. With Linux and X10, you can really set up your house for a few hundred dollars, especially lights. If all you want to do is lights, which is typically what most people are going to want to do, then it's not going to cost a lot of money. Once you start getting into doing curtains and blinds and stuff, it does tend to get a little bit more expensive because of the controllers and the motors involved in that. Now, X10, yeah, sure, it's cheap, and it has its drawbacks. Specifically, the worst one is that it's only one-way communication. So if I go to turn on, say, the pump outside to transfer water, then when the transmitter sends the signal to the module on that particular power point, that module doesn't send feedback to say, yes, I received the signal, I have turned on. When you get into the very expensive stuff like CBus, it's two-way. So it sends the signal, it then waits for a reply from that module saying, yes, I've turned on. X10 doesn't do that. Now, to fix some of the problems, they came out with X10-2. And what that does is they introduced a few things. Firstly, it's got soft start on and off. So when you turn your lights on, they don't just come on full bright. They come on very slowly and increase in ambience up into whatever the preset was. And that is just posh for starters. It looks good when your lights turn on and off like that. Also, they have built-in signal filters and can receive the X10 signal down to about 25 millivolts. Previously, it was about 100 millivolts and stuff like that. So I would have said once upon a time it's probably only about 80% efficient, that like you could turn on something and maybe depending on if you got the microwave on or something, the other thing wouldn't come on. Now, with the latest ones, with what they've put into like this noise filtering, etc., you know, it's very rare that something doesn't come on. Anyway, if you're in the market for, it's certainly worth having a look at, hey, you anyway. And like I said, it's affordable for most people.
Peter, wasn't there a guy working for IBM, I think, in Europe, that was working on the same type of program, that he had sensors with his doors and windows and could tell if the window was left open or things like that. He could turn the heat down.
Oh, yeah, certainly this is, like, I can go to Mum and Dad's house and SSH into my machine at home and turn the exterior lights on, turn the air conditioner on as we leave there so the house is lit up and that when I get home. And this is, I'm not sure what system he would have used, but I guarantee you it certainly wouldn't be any cheaper than what you can do with the X10 gear.
Well, they were designing this system, the article I had read. This guy and numerous guys that work for the company were designing all kinds of little gizmos and stuff to put into the system.
Yeah, well, there's quite a few on the market. Munster B, you've even had a play with this, how you can turn my lights on all the way from America.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
And really, it didn't take that long from the time I think... You used the web. We set up that one of the web interfaces for it, didn't we? Just to give it a try.
I didn't think there was lag because as soon as I hit the switch, I could see your light come on in the camera.
Yeah, well, that's right. Because on the same system, I've got that ZoneMinder set up. Yeah, that's right. So it really is a very impressive little application.
What's the base of this course, Peter? What'd you say? It was a box that you put in the wall? And
well, to start off with, it's the computer interface module. Now, in Australia, that's called a CM12. Costs around $80. In America, you're probably going to look at about $20, and it's called a CM11. There is a cheaper thing you can get, which is called a Firecracker, which is plugs into your USB port, and it actually sends the RF signal out to a receiver. whereas the computer interface module plugs into the PowerPoint and it directly inputs the signal into your power lines. But the modules, just to give an example, I bought eight controller mini switch for to put on the wall the other day. That cost me about $90 in America. I was just having a look at X10 over there last night, and the same thing is $12. So
that's a 12-port controller, is that what you said?
Well, it's called a eight-switch mini controller, I think is actually what it's called. But that what that does is it goes on the wall. It also, when you're dealing with infrared, like your Harmony remote that's going to control all your home entertainment system, you need some way to turn that infrared signal into a signal to put into the power lines. And there's a few things available. One of them is this control module, which is just a switchboard that goes on the wall, and it's got it can control with the buttons on it 16 modules, but it can receive the signal from your Harmony remote for the whole 256.
And you need a PC with this, right?
Well, no. The X10 can be operated without the PC, right? You can simply have a remote control, a receiver module, and then just send commands off, to each individual module, just to turn it on and off and dim it.
Right, but
once you
want
introduce
to do it.
Automatically, exactly. That's when, first of all, you can program the CM12. Now, my CM12 is programmed so the exterior lights come on at half an hour past dusk and will run for 2 hours. And, of course, because you're using dusk and dawn and you put in your GPS coordinates and then it knows where you are in the world. It knows what time dusk and dawn is at that particular time of year, so it's changing all the time. You don't just say, come on at 6 o'clock, because obviously in summer at 6 o'clock it's still very bright. You say half an hour past dusk. So you can program the CM12 via HeyU. There's an X10 schedule, which is a simple text file that you go and write out in a specific way. Then you use HeyU to upload that to your CM12 into the EEPROM, and then that'll sit there. You can disconnect your computer, but that will run through those sequences that you programmed. Maybe open and close your blinds, in the morning and in the afternoon as well.
That's cool. But Peter, where? Give me a mental image of like, where's everything plugged in? Like, how does it control all this?
There's several ways Cloud Tour do it. You can buy just a module which is very similar to a double adapter. So for any lamps or appliances, you unplug it from the wall, you put in this module, it looks exactly, say, like a double. You know what a double adapter is?
Just like a grounding adapter.
Yeah, like a little box between the plug and the wall socket.
Yep.
So you might just put that for your lamps, etc. But then I've actually gone and replaced all my light switches in the house with light switches that have built-in control modules.
Right.
Now, if you don't want to do that, you can then go and remove your current existing light switches. You can buy little mini digital controllers that fit between your lights and the switch. And that goes in the wall cavity. So, and all the new ones are just tiny. They're all micro devices. I'll just put a link. I buy a lot of my stuff from this mob here because they're really cheap. But this will give you a sort of idea of the light switches and the modules I'm talking about. But if you go to, I think it's just called x10.com in America, you'll see more or less what I'm talking about.
I was wondering how this would work with that Shiva plug, Peter. You know, that little thing that plugs in the wall at the computer?
Yeah, when we first talked about that, that was one of the things I mentioned. It could purely run HeyU and just be... currently my MythBox runs HeyU because the MythBox is on most of the time anyway. Yeah, but certainly I'd love to get a Shiva and make that a dedicated HeyU box. And
well, I tell you what, I seen it down to self, and this thing is cool. I mean, it looks like a... It looks like a trying to think. You ever see them adapters you plug into your wall that turns two outlets into six?
Yeah.
It looks just like that, except, I mean, it's approximately that same size. And the guy told me that, because I was talking to that Brian down there, and he said the thing's got 512 mega RAM in it, and it runs a 1 gigahertz processor in this little thing, and it is slick.
Yeah, we talked about it on Cranks a while back, and yeah, it certainly have the horsepower to be able to run AU, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, and it's got a USB, it's got USB where you can put, an external hard drive on it if you wanted to. It has the network connection on it, and you could even run that, right out of your wall and just pop it right in the thing. It's slick.
Yeah, I just posted in there a couple of things you can have a look at the actual modules and that. Monster B, I'll just post this. This is like what you'll see when you operate. AU has a monitor thing as well that you can have running, and it just tells you everything that's been addressed in the house and what's going on. I'll just post that there so you can have a look at it. I mean, there's not much to look at.
Is that a GUI program, or is it just a command line program?
No, it's a command line. You can get the web in. There's about four, I think, listed on the Hey You site. But like I said, there's no need for them. And that's just what you'll be looking at when you're actually using it.
Well, I have to – hold on. I have to make a note here. I have to put a piece of paper and tack it up on the wall so I remember Hey You, so,
Sorry, Bill.
To get started with this, just say for one outlet, okay, you need the one controller to plug in. Now, what plugs into your computer?
Okay, the bare minimum you're going to need, you're talking to get started with the computer, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, well, the Firecracker is the cheapest way. Now, what the Firecracker does, it's exactly the same, I'd imagine, as when you hold a remote in your hand. The Marmitek remote is a RF remote, right? So it uses radio frequency instead of infrared. The Firecracker on the back of the computer is the same thing. And then you need the one receiver, and that's an RF receiver plugged into a wall somewhere. And then you just go and buy your modules. Whatever modules. It might be the one lounge room module that does your lights. So, three things. And there are starter packs of, that you can buy that has a couple of bayonet lighting modules and a remote control and the receiver. But really, for any geek, you're going to want to buy the CM11 or CM12, which is the computer module that is wired through the USB port, programmable PC interface module is what it's called.
Well, what's the difference between that and a Firecracker then?
Well, the Firecracker is only sending out infrared signals, radio frequency signals to the receiver. The actual PC interface has onboard EEPROM that you can program. It also directly sends the signal straight, because it's plugged into the wall. It's sending it straight into the wall socket. You wouldn't need a receiver, RF receiver module.
Oh, for each unit, you mean? For each thing that you want to plug in?
No, you only need one receiver module. You need some way of getting the signal into the power lines, whether it be through the PC module, an RF receiver module, or that Mini 8 controller that I said I've got on the wall.
Right.
As long as you can get the signal in from a remote or something once, then it travels through your power lines to every single module on your house.
Right, but you have to put each module on, correct?
Yeah, that's right. At each power point or whatever, yeah, you put a module. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. There, yeah, I didn't understand.
There's where
I
think we lost you there for a minute.
Yeah, sorry. I thought you were talking about each module had to... outlet had to have a receiver module, but no, it's only one receiver to get from your remote or whatever.
Right, but each device that you want to control has to have a module.
Yeah.
Okay, and how much are they?
Well, it depends on the type you're going to use. you know, a bayonet socket, I think you can buy for $20. These light switches I've got on my walls are about $110 each. So it
depends switches.
On, yeah, it depends on which way you want to go about doing it.
Yeah, because that's a lot, $110 each. Holy crap!
Yeah, but you can get out. You can go the other way. I got them because they've got they do a lot more than just turn your light on and off.
Well, yeah, they'll dim it. It's like a dimmer, right? It's a programmable dimmer, basically.
Yeah, that's right. That can be controlled different ways. They also glow faintly at night, and they handle a hell of a lot more power. I think they'll handle up to 600 watts.
Question for you, though. Do they work on fluorescence?
Okay, fluorescence, you actually have to go, not for a lighting module, you have to go to the
motor module, right? Control module.
No, well, not the motor module, but the power module. Like the same module you'd use for a jug or something, which are rated to about 1,200 watts.
Yeah, because, see, they make special dimmers here for fluorescence because of that problem.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can't, see, that's going to screw up. See, in this country, nobody will do it because, you know, everybody's putting these compact fluorescents in and, you know, God, dude. You know, you're going to spend more money on these dimmers, and oh my God.
Yeah,
people are crazy.
People don't want to dim them anyway. People don't want to dim fluorescent lights. And these days, people are going away from fluorescent lights. And all my exterior lighting now and a lot of my interior lighting, I've moved over to LED. Any light inside the house that I don't want to dim, I've moved over to LED, surface mount LEDs. All exterior lights, surface mount LEDs, all my floodlights outside. Before, where I had a 150-watt floodlight, I have replaced now with surface mount LEDs that are drawing, I think, about 6 watts. So before, when the kangaroos set off a couple of, you know, my floodlights where it's stuck in 500 watts, I used to get a bit worried that these things were burning all night because the kangaroos are feeding on the front lawn. Now it doesn't matter with the LEDs. They can run all night. Who cares? It's only drawing a couple of cents worth of electricity.
Yeah, but how's the light output compared to a fluorescent? I mean, the lumens has got to be different.
Yeah, it's not as good, clearly, but to light up the house outside when you're just, you know, what are you doing? You want to walk from the car to the veranda. You want to sit out on the veranda of an evening, have a cup of coffee. It's fine.
Yeah, see, here, LEDs, and Jesse James wrote in the thing here, LEDs are very expensive here. I mean, it's not, and you definitely don't get, see, we, you know, here we're looking at something like you'd use on a fire truck that's going to, you know, when it lights up your yard, if you're looking at it, it'll burn your retinas out, you know? I mean, they're crazy here, people.
Well, so you only have to buy it once.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, 330. Like, yeah, sure, I think. To replace a downlight that cost me, a 35-watt halogen downlight, it cost $2.50, I think. I'm paying about $40. But like 330 said, I've put that in there. I'll never have to worry again. That'll outlast me. So,
well, see the outdoor compact fluorescents. The company I used to work for, they did a big conversion on all these buildings and stuff, and they put a lot of the exterior compact fluorescents in. And I mean, I worked for like 4 years for this company, and I don't think I ever changed an outdoor bulb unless it got broke, and because they work great.
Yeah, well, I think the advantage of LEDs are you don't have that mercury and stuff in them, aren't they?
Yeah.
Starting to discover now that fluorescent tubes aren't very good for the environment and are probably worse than incandescent lights to begin with.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, they don't care about that, you know. But,
yeah.
You know, you got in this country, you worry about that 50 years from now.
Yeah, but anyway, that's another subject. But anyway, that's it. Thanks, Bill, Mr. B.
You keep saying my real name. People are going to find out who I am.
Sorry. Monster B. Bill B.
All right, that was pretty cool, Peter.
Sorry.
Real quick, one question. Okay, you don't need a computer for this, so if you can turn your computers off or do you have to leave a computer on?
No, that's right. With the CM12, it's programmable. So no, the computers, once you program it, then the computers can go off.
Okay, that's neat.
But you do need a computer to program it in the beginning.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Wonderful story. Wonderful story.
Any more questions before we move on? All right. All right, Pigwall.
All righty. Well, I was actually looking for a topic to discuss. I ran across this article, and I thought it was so awesome that people at MIT, they created a camera out of cloth. I was talking with Peter64 about this one earlier, and he said it's absolutely amazing what they can do these days. The article starts out, "The ultimate spy camera would allow someone to walk into a room recording everything they see, and no one would ever know a camera was present on their body, not even after a search was conducted. A new fiber created by researchers at MIT could provide such a solution. MIT researchers have managed to create a fiber that can be woven into a cloth capable of detecting light. In so doing, it may be possible in future to record images with the fabric connected to a computer, meaning a suit made from this stuff could record information in all directions around the wearer. Professor Yoey Fink, lead researcher in the project, has already demonstrated such a fabric capturing the image of a smiley face. Commenting on the new material, he said, "This is the first time that anybody has demonstrated that a single plane of fibers or fabric can collect images just like a camera, but without a lens. This work constitutes a new approach to vision and imaging. A mixture of semiconductor material, metal electrodes, and a polymer insulator help to make up the fiber, which is created in a furnace that melts them together. The fibers are then formed into a mesh, which can measure light intensity and turns it into an electrical signal. These signals are read by a computer and formed into an image. At the moment, that image is black and white. The research will continue and is backed by the Army Research Office, meaning soldiers wearing suits that record surroundings may be one of the first applications."
Of course.
Doc, paste that into the chat. I will put in the IRC. There you go.
With these peg wall, and then what we talked about, those printable batteries the other day.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to wonder where it's all going to stop.
It's not going to stop.
We live in exciting times, don't we?
Oh, yeah. Fast. You know, the problem is, though, you go back to the basics. They still can't make a battery that's going to last, and they can't make a battery that's going to, you know, hold a charge for a long period of time. I mean, that's something that's been for a long time. So, I mean, with all these new technologies, they're still having problems with basics.
Yeah, that's a good point. Seems like they ought to spend a little bit of time on some of these basic things, like, yeah, developing batteries that actually can hold the charge and getting, you know, I don't know, optical media so that it doesn't, like, fail every other burn or just whatever, you know?
Well, certainly laptops and mobile phones have gone a hell of a long way to making battery technology take off.
Yeah, that's
true. Look, we've gone from, what, nickel-cadmium only a few years ago to lithium polymer or...
lithium ion.
Yeah, whatever the next one's going to be, yeah.
Yeah, but you see, that lithium ion has been out for a long time, and they still haven't perfected it. That's the problem they're having with these cars, is batteries. Dude, there was a thing on Security Now. Steve Gibson was talking about they have a capacitive recharge system that they're working on that's going to do away with batteries. I mean, this is basically restructuring the whole concept of a capacitor.
Personally, I think it'd be really cool, though, to actually have some of this fabric and have it working. Could you imagine how small you can make security cameras?
Could you imagine what you could do with them?
Yeah, I would life cast with it.
I was thinking more about... Oh, no, I'm going to say that. In a bit.
Well, you know, it'll be nice for, like, police and... security situations, I think, really.
And now all we have to do is figure out how to block them.
Pulse generators, man.
Or infrared LEDs, that might work still.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure it's got to send out a signal of some sort, and it's got to be like a microwave signal or something.
So what happens if you put your shirt on backwards?
Then everybody gets to see your boobies.
said a bad word. It's okay as long as you don't put your pants on backwards.
Yeah.
Ah, the cloth camera. Finally and truly eliminating the crisscross style.
Well, so far it's just like literally like a proof of concept almost, or?
Yeah, it's a prototype right now.
Okay, cool.
But they are using it. They are using it in the field.
No, they're not using it.
Testing it. I mean, they're not testing it. But this is all laboratory then.
Yeah, because they said some guy recorded the image of a happy face. That's as far as they've gotten so far. But
where the hell
cool.
You find a happy face anymore?
Yeah, I don't know.
A screenshot from a computer that was printed out?
I don't know. Maybe he was talking about his own face being happy that this thing
really
worked.
See, I do believe it said it was just a regular smiley face.
It could be because of the bright color. That could be why it picked it up so well.
Yeah,
it was just regular smiley face.
Of course, it was probably 10 feet in diameter, but, you know. That's okay, as long as they continue doing something, you know, and it's not one of these projects that, you know, 10 years from now you hear, oh, yeah, they're working on this fabric that takes pictures, you know.
200 years ago, we had the smallpox blanket sent to, you know, people's biological warfare. 200 and some years in the future, we'll have the camera blanket.
Nice.
So then we can tape the people that we give smallpox to?
Not any of that, but you can see how they're suffering with it.
Yeah, and make it a pay-per-view event.
There you go.
That's how we'll get the economy back online.
All right.
I guess that's really all I have on that one.
All righty, 3:30, you're up.
All right, well, I'm going to talk about something that is a little more usable currently than the fabric camera. I've been playing with the HTML5 video markup stuff that made it into Firefox 3.5 and a couple of other browsers. What this basically does is makes Flash completely not necessary.
I have to ask you, how are you making out with that?
It's actually running really well. If you go to numberedhumanindustries.com/video and you're running Firefox 3.5, you'll see... Dan Washko from last Ohio Linux Fest. I don't know how much more we can talk about that, but there's some cool things you can do. If you want to just have a Theora video, then the tag you'd use is video space SRC equals and for just the sake of argument, we'll call it zombie.org in quotes. Space controls, and then you just close the and just a window with like the.
Is it me or is he skipping?
He's skipping.
He's probably watching his video.
Yeah, I thought it was me.
Definitely not.
Your battery's not going dead, is it?
No, it's not.
You still there?
Yeah, I'm trying to kill various things to see if it'll help.
Well, I thought you were on your cell phone.
No, I'm on the N800. Am I sounding better yet?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, sounds fine.
Okay. But what you do is, it looks like standard HTML. Okay, you've got the greater than and less than brackets. But if you're unlike me and you want everyone to be able to see your video, you know, because not everyone is going to have the Theora codecs unless something magical happens and they actually get this thing passed. In the HTML5 spec, what you can do is have it degrade gracefully to either MP4 or all the way down to a Flash video. And let's stick this in the IRC. There's a little hacks story on how to do it, and it actually really is cool. Like if you go to numberedhumanindustries.com/video in something that. Like, if you use, like, Firefox 3, just 3.0, the only video you'd see is the video of me explaining, hey, if you don't have Firefox 3.5, you can't see anything but this video, because it downgrades itself to a Flash video that's hosted on YouTube. And if you do have Firefox 3.5, you get to see everything that I've posted to YouTube in, like, the last year and a half, because I pulled it all down and converted it.
Okay, so the idea of this is to get Firefox 3.5.
Yeah. There are some other browsers that are doing it. There's a version of Opera that does it. What I found on the web is said that Opera 9.52 will do it, and one of the versions of Chrome will do it.
And in 3 years, Internet Explorer will do it.
Let's say I figure that IE and everybody else will do it as soon as this is all ratified. There's some infighting right now. All the browser makers are arguing whether it should be Theorin, Vorbis, or H.264. But Mozilla for Firefox 3.5 went ahead and just put both of them in.
Well, and that's the good thing about this. I mean, because last I heard, they had removed the codec requirements from the spec. Like, they said, okay, you know, you can put in brackets video or audio or whatever, but in terms of saying, okay, in order to be, you know, a spec browser, you have to have these codecs available, they've removed that from the HTML5 spec. That's from InfoWorld on July 2nd, so I don't know, maybe something new has happened, but the cool thing is, anyway, that a browser can still utilize it and say, yeah, we're gonna support this, you know, like Firefox 3.5 is doing. So cool browsers will enable this no matter what.
I was saying, one of the things, this is actually really easy to do. I know pretty much next to nothing about programming for the web, and I was able to do it. I mean, my website is all flat files.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now in Firefox 3.5,
mm-hmm.
and works perfect. I like the interface.
Yeah, and one cool thing is if you have scripting disabled, like if you're running NoScript or something, you can actually just allow the one, you know, just the video section, you know, if you right-click on it, and it won't show you the controls, but you can right-click, and the controls are all in your right-click menu.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. That's cool because you can. It has save video as. Or you can send video to someone by email.
Yeah, because it's just a streaming Theora file.
Yeah, this would be cool once it replaces Flash someday.
You should stream a video of your cat singing in the kitchen.
So if I can catch him doing it, I will.
We just heard him.
Yeah, I got to catch him on video, though.
Well, any more questions on this one?
Coming on, days I wanted to sway.
You're just on standby?
Yep. I'm waiting.
How about you, Claude? Do you have anything for us?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have heard about the Hadopi or Hadapi router. Has anyone heard of that yet?
No.
All right, so this is not really a hardware router. It's just firmware for the OpenWRT. But it was written up about in Le Monde in France. And apparently some group, I think it's like, I forget the name of the little group that's putting this out. But it is a firmware for your OpenWRT, and its sole purpose is to look at local wireless routers in your area, you know, in your apartment building, your neighborhood, whatever, and just automatically crack the passwords of all the routers, you know, that it can see, and then it will utilize different routers for things like torrenting. And I guess whatever else you want to do. And the purpose of it is, of course, to, I guess, not anonymize what you're doing, but spreading the wealth of what you're doing around or the blame of what you're doing around. And, you know, apparently the instigator of this firmware was that, well, you know, the whole torrenting debate, I guess, you know, and the fact that some people are being persecuted, I guess, for, you know, torrenting copywritten material and stuff like that. As far as I know, the release, the firmware isn't available yet for download, but it is something that's being developed, I guess, and it's pretty much ready to go from what they're saying. And the OpenWRT firmware, so called Hadopi, H-A-D-O-P-I, and it's supposed to be out there. And I like it because it's just like, you know, the more they try to clamp down on stupid stuff like torrenting and copyright and intellectual property, you know, the more the hacker community finds ways around it. And that's really, really important, I think.
What routers does it work on?
Well, I guess the OpenWRT is what? Like, it's a couple of different routers, right? There's a couple of the different...
Linksys routers, yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know which...
That's at DDWRT, right? That firmware?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that works on quite a few of them, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, so this is firmware all by itself, or do I still need this to add this? You guys keep saying DDWRT and OpenWRT. Those are firmwares, too. So you would need that firmware to use this?
I'm not sure. I believe so, yes. I believe that is correct. Or maybe it's just based on OpenWRT.
Okay.
I'm not really sure.
You might be able to use it anywhere where that will work, that DDWRT
right,
or the Open.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be it as well.
Yeah, it may work under the same principle, you know.
I mean, I'm sure they probably just took OpenWRT and added some stuff to it, you know. I mean, I would imagine. I mean, I don't see why they would have to reinvent everything from the ground up.
No. Oh, no, you know they didn't do that. They just ripped up part of the code and added a few more little tricks to it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a good way, I think, to confound, you know, these people who are trying to really monitor people and then, you know, say, oh, you can't do this on the internet, you can't do that, you can't use this. You know, it's
well, this would have helped that mother, right? It's getting sued for the 26 songs.
Exactly. The proverbial, you know, small town Midwestern people who are getting sued for accidentally downloading the latest, you know, whatever song. You know, this is exactly that kind of thing. And like Jesse James in the chat room just pointed out, it would kind of suck to be the neighbor, you know, who got the password cracked and is now torrenting, you know, random stuff without your knowledge. But at the same time, you know, it's really people banding together, whether they know it or not, you know, to really just say, no, authorities, you're not going to be able to track us all down, you know. Now, granted, that's not like a big community agreeing on banding together and saying, yeah, let's open up our network and share all the bandwidth and just totally, you know, we'll all, you know, do, you know, everything that's illegal and they can't take us all down.
Well, it's just like with the radar detectors and the, you know, the speed guns. I mean,
yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one gets this, and then another one makes a thing to detect that, and they make a better speed gun, and yada, yada, yada. Of course, in the process, they do come up with some good stuff sometimes, so it really is beneficial.
Saying what's cool about this is, your neighbor will get a cease and desist, and, you know, the FBI will kick in their door and everything.
Right.
But nothing should happen to them because there will be absolutely no evidence that anything happened.
And they're
not going to have the files.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's so really all you're doing is costing the government and the collusion squad or whatever you want to call them. You know, the MPAA, RIAA, other things ending in AA.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to cost them money.
Yeah.
And it's just
no, it's going to cost us money.
Oh, because they're not government agencies.
Yeah, they're... But it would, I guess it would technically trickle down if it was costing, like, the FBI money to come bust people's doors down. Although I question how often that happens anyway, number one. And number two, you know, I mean, it's going to cost us all to fight, you know, the government, I think. So who cares? Let it cost a little bit of extra. We're going to pay taxes no matter what. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and the more of this kind of crap happens, the less likely it is that they're actually going to go kick people's doors down.
Right, exactly.
I mean, yeah. How many doors you kick down with, you know, innocent people sitting in there before you go, you know what, let's not kick doors down anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I think most of the time they're getting all their information through the net anyway. I don't think they're, you know, they're just putting either through the internet service provider or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're just playing man in the middle and getting your information.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you be going, hey, wow, my net traffic is really slow today?
Well, yeah, but a lot of people aren't
going to... you can throttle it.
Well, a lot of people aren't even going to know. I mean, they know that the internet is slow. They don't even know to call the... They're not going to call their provider and ask about it or anything, you know? I mean,
most people wouldn't even do a speed check on their system.
Yeah.
See, I love to yell at Comcast, though, so I totally would.
Well, so would I, yeah, because Comcast I hate, but that's
exactly
us. That's us. We're not the ones we're not the ones, you know, we're going to be the ones running the firmware, not the ones necessarily being hacked by it all the time.
We're the ones that should have the boss enough password for this not to happen.
Yeah, like the password and the MAC filtering and the everything else that you can think of.
So is there a roadmap on when this is going to be released?
Not that I can find. I haven't really looked around all that much because I don't have a compatible router anyway. But apparently it'll be soon. That's all I've got for you.
Say, look here. If you go to, I'm just going to stick this in the IRC so that it can end up in the show notes because I'm not even going to try to pronounce that. But it's basically Hadapi router in France. In French. But
oh, cool.
Supposedly you can buy one for 50 euros.
Well, there you go. And it's red.
Yeah.
I'm a beat.
Ferrari red.
Yeah, dangerous.
Pretty. Shiny. Well, if it's shiny, that means I need it.
Well, you were just hacked.
Yeah.
Here's another one on hackerspace.net called the Hostel WRT. Looks like somebody talked about it at it was a French hackerspace festival on June 26th. Somebody did a talk about it.
Yeah, I guess it's happening, or I mean, obviously it's happening in France because some French dude did it, but I guess part of the thing is that over in France, there's a limitation as to how quickly these kinds of charges can be brought against people or something, and it takes a lot of legal, like it has to be, you have to really have a lot of evidence, you know, that they, like 330 was saying, that they actually downloaded the file and have it on their system, and if the judges can't see that that's the case within a certain amount of time, then they can't pass a judgment against the person. So it's just kind of like, I don't know, I guess it takes advantage of some kind of heavy, costly bureaucratic system, you know, that's inefficient as usual. But I figure it would be just as useful over here.
Oh, absolutely.
You guys remember that router project that was kind of starting up maybe a year ago, I think, and it was like some deal where you got this free router and like, you know, quote unquote.
Yeah, Bonera.
What is it called?
Bonera.
Okay. Whatever happened to that? Is that still?
It's still running around. They'll give you a free router as long as you're willing to share the connection with everyone.
Yeah, I mean,
what, share the network connection?
Yeah. Basically, the idea is you leave it open, and they give you a router.
Well, what good is that if your neighbor is BitTorrent off your system?
Well,
they
have to be a member. They would have to be a member.
You can set it up so that they have to be a... It really depends.
Oh, you have to configure all the settings and who's allowed and who's not?
No, I think it's a WPA login, and if your neighbor bought into it, he can share yours. Or if somebody's in the area, I thought, right?
Sort of. No, that's one of the options that you have, yes. You can also charge people for it and try to make money off of it, or you can just set it up and say, okay, it's open. And I believe you get, like, I believe you have some kind of virtual, maybe a virtual, you know, network that people aren't allowed onto or something like that. Some way of configuring it so that your signal is kind of split into two, I guess, ESSIDs or something like that. I'm not sure. And I'm kind of working off of memory anyway. But yeah.
Well, you're getting two different IP addresses then?
I could be wrong about that. But yeah, I do remember that there were like three different configurations that you could choose from. Like one where it was open for everyone, one where it was open for anyone who is also a member of this Bonera thing, and then one where you can actually make money by setting up sort of a, I guess, like one of those hotspots, you know, where they can actually sign up and pay, I don't know, $5.
Well, you become an ISP then, basically.
No, you become an access point. I mean, like a T-Mobile hotspot or, you know, something like that at a Starbucks or something.
Okay.
Or at those... You know,
Wi-Fi like McDonald's.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where you pay $2.99 to access. Yeah.
Yep. I didn't know if it was still around, but I guess it is.
Well, how do you?
That was kind of a cool idea.
I'm trying to do a Google search on it. I can't get the spelling right.
Was it Bonera? Is that what you said?
Here it is. FON.com. Just go to FON.com, and yeah, it looks like it's on Bonera 2.0. Yeah, yeah. See, phone users get two secure signals: one for personal, and one for public use. Or you can make an average of €3 a month. Wow, €3 a month for selling Wi-Fi access.
Yeah, this is different than what I was thinking of, because the one I was thinking of, I can't think of the name, where you bought the router and you set it up to share with people.
No, I think that's this as well. I think that's the third option on here. I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I remember that as well. Where if you're all a member of Finera, then you can go and you get the password for. Well, I don't know. Yeah. If you go to community though, it says there's three different ways to do it.
Yeah, and it also gives you a list of different Finera hotspots.
That's cool.
Oh, people that already have one up and running, you mean?
Yeah.
I would be interested to know what the little ESSID shows up as for those Finera ones, because I know that, I mean, from like Cupertino to Pittsburgh to New York to Maryland, I keep seeing like the same, some of the same ESSIDs, and I know, I mean, a lot of them are like the default links to, you know, names and stuff like that, but there are a couple that I don't associate with any brand, and I just wonder if they could possibly be Finera or something similar, or just some no-name brand of router that I had never seen before.
What do you mean, the IP addresses?
No, like the names of the network, the name of the broadcast, you know, signal.
They're all over the United States. I'm looking at the map. There's a lot of them.
I might have to join this thing just to play around with it.
Ooh, you're going to be a hotspot, eh?
Yeah, why not?
Well, if it'd be useful, you get to use the rest of the network when you're out and about.
Right, see, that's what I'm thinking.
Wow, there's a lot in Chicago. They're everywhere.
Did you just say hotspot?
Yeah.
2 minutes, Finn.
Ooh.
We don't have any of that dirty talk around here.
Somebody needs to cuss so he doesn't pick on people. Somebody volunteer.
Well, I think Pegwell's just
people
gone
could go
for
to
a sandwich.
HumanIndustries.com/video and watch Dan's ass. That's worth a try.
It didn't work. Any more questions about that router, Finera thing, before we move on? Nothing?
No.
All right. Is Jay Lindsay still awake?
Yes, sir.
Do you have a story or a topic?
Yeah, I was going to comment quickly on a set of links. There's been some talk recently in the IRC about learning programming, and I'm not sure if everybody's aware, but a lot of the big universities, they put their content up on the web for free, like MIT, UC Berkeley, Stanford. Some of them have audio, video, and even if they don't, you know, you can get a lot out of reading their notes, the slides, and the exams. But the video really does help in the learning process when you can see somebody actually doing it on the board, you know.
You know, I think it was Harvard that is actually doing a lot of their stuff in Aug, Fiora now, like a lot of their classes, although I don't have a link for it.
Yeah, there are a lot of them that are going Creative Commons with their material, too.
That's cool. Wow, this is really cool. I mean, MIT, that just seems, I don't know, and even Berkeley, I mean, those are two pretty big... No, it was Stanford that was going Aug with a lot of their stuff, actually. Now that I see that written out, I remember it's Stanford. Cool, I'm going to save those links.
That paste bin you put it in, how long will they remain in this paste bin?
That one set for a month.
Okay, cool. Because that way it might take me a couple days before I get to show up. So, are there audio clips, too, or is it all video?
Yeah, some of them are audio. You really have to look through it because it's like a mixture. Some of them have video, some of them have audio.
Sweet. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Cool.
Sorry, Monster B, just a second. Pegwell, did you just go and make sandwiches?
I did.
Did you offer everyone else any? That's a sandwich violation in the bin. 2 minutes.
Give you time to eat your sandwich, damn sheriff.
If you were still in the art, you could have joined him, had a sandwich with him.
Oh, jeez.
Well, he was going to go next, but I guess, Azmuth, you're going to have to go next. I was going to save you for last, but since art's in the bin.
Oh, really?
I was going to save the best for last.
Oh, well. Now, what I've been thinking about this week is just how lucky we are on Linux. You can take... a computer that somebody else has thrown away, put Linux on it, and you have all these games in just about any repo that from any distro you can choose, and you can keep a six-year-old busy for years, and it costs nothing. Yeah, what I particularly like is you've got the educational games, you've got like Child's Play and Tux Paint, well, Peter and I were talking about one, G-Compress. These things that will, you know, work from age 2 to age 12, as well as it does not take a lot of computer to play many of the Linux games. Like I've got my 6-year-old grandson on a discarded Athlon 900 that has a 10-year-old 3D graphics card in it that works wonders on games like Torx and Tux Racer, Super Tux Kart, Super Tux, Tengus, and it's all free. How can you beat that?
Yeah, it really is just another area that Linux shines. It just goes to show that you don't have to spend a lot of money to accomplish a task. All those games that you mentioned, my daughter, you know, started off playing and still plays. And you also mentioned you don't need a particularly fast machine to do them. And then a lot of them are educational and teach the kids, you know, while they're having fun, they're learning. And that's an important aspect of it all too.
Well, and a lot of the games you get them started on young, and when they wear out the repos, they're getting computer savvy enough that they may start wanting to do a little more with a computer, and they've already gotten rid of any basic fears of it.
Yeah, well, even when they get to school, you know, they can use a keyboard and a mouse, which is a hell of a lot more than most of the kids in their class can do.
All right, is this correct? I'm looking at the Ubuntu repos, and it's showing in the game section 930 packages.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I mean, that's amazing. I never really looked in here for games.
And then, is there an educational section?
The thing about those games...
Sorry,
yes? Yeah, it has an educational section also. The educational section is there also at... It's an amazing collection of programs that do wonders, and it's all free.
And you don't have to spend a fortune on a machine to use it.
No, you can take somebody's cast off and make a machine that'll play these games great out of it.
Well, let's name all 930. You ready? Okay. 3D chess. I was just kidding.
So... Just in terms of running this stuff like on old computers and stuff like that, I think that I heard that Ohio Linux Fest this year is going to have a free geek kind of deal where people will go, you know, and take a sort of learn Linux, you know, for an afternoon or whatever, and build a computer, and then they get to take home, you know, the computer that they built. So I don't know what kind of, I mean, I think it is being sponsored by Free Geek, so it's going to be older hardware, I'm sure. But, I mean, that's like a perfect example because, yeah, all, you know, people are going to learn Linux, build their system, and walk away with the system that they just built with Linux on it. Should be pretty cool.
Yeah, well, let's face it, in the Windows world, you know, anything less than 2 gigahertz, they discard them. They don't want them.
Yeah.
They won't run... they're, you know, if they don't have 2 gigahertz and at least 2 megabytes of memory, they won't run anything on the Windows world, not in the way they want them to run.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things I remember that kind of turned me off of Mac in the end, just the realization that the software was being released without the choice, you know, not to have all the whiz-bang effects and stuff like that my older systems couldn't run. And then seeing that Linux, I mean, you could have the latest and greatest graphic environment, or you could have no graphic environment, you know, or anywhere in between. I mean, that's just a huge difference because One is just pushing you away from your old hardware, and the other one is completely making it stay alive and be useful for you.
Well, it sure makes hand-me-downs convenient for Linux, the way they're doing it in the Windows world, and in the Mac world too.
Yeah, I mean, I've gained more computers. I mean, workable, usable computers since I, you know, really got into Linux than I ever had with Mac, because obviously with Mac you're always throwing out your old one and getting your overpriced new one, whereas with Linux you're taking stuff that people are going to throw out, you know, and putting Linux on it and using it for another 5 years. You know, I mean, it's really cool. And as a geek who likes gadgets, I mean, that's sort of ideal.
Well, the part that I find the handiest is that instead of my grandson harassing his grandma to play on her laptop, mm-hmm. you know, I've got him on a cast-off computer in there, and he's just tickled to death with it. And it runs the Linux games beautifully. And it's got, 256 megabyte of RAM in it.
That's so cool.
It's just a shame how much stuff gets thrown away, though. I mean, they have, like, over by me in the dump, they have, like, once every maybe month and a half or 2 months, they have a disposal thing for home electronics, they call it, you know, with TVs. And I mean, there is piles and piles of computers there.
Well, that's cool in a way, because you can just take everything that you want. The real bummer is when people destroy it before they throw it away. For no good reason, you know, like...
Yeah, but a lot of this is thrown right out of a car, and it's...
a lot of it is destroyed before you
can even get to it.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That's a real bummer when they do that, because, I mean, that's just... I don't know.
And like you said, there's probably computers in there 4 or 5 years old, which, you know, really would run like rockets with Linux.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't care if it has a hard drive in it. That's... I mean, you don't even need a hard drive to run a live CD.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why those, like, the free geek organizations and stuff like that are important, because at least they're doing something to get people to turn in their old stuff and redistribute it. That's a good thing.
Yeah, the sad part is, though, like, the school that I worked for, they must have thrown, you know, 100 computers away.
Yeah,
they didn't
throw
them away. They recycled them, so they say.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they were all good stuff. I mean, good. Anybody would take them.
Yeah.
And they just, we can't just give them away to people because,
right.
you know, their insurance and this and that and, you know, kiss mine, and it's like crazy.
Well, all the green freaks should be embracing Linux. Let's face it, it sure saves a lot of heavy metals from the dump heaps.
Yeah, they absolutely should be. I think a lot of people don't know about it. You know, they don't realize it's such a big deal, and they don't understand the...
Jude, Peter is lying on the bed in his red stockings, waiting to pleasure you.
That's it. In the bin. 5 minutes. Come on, Mayor. Override the sheriff.
You know, I can't start doing that.
That's twice. Twice that damn
He's
computer
the
jumped up. So what? You're the mayor.
It must be 4 o'clock. That automatically goes off at four o'clock
somewhere.
You know, I'd hate to break into Peter's house. That would scare the bejesus out of somebody.
I know.
Him on the bed or to hate you?
I think it's the red stockings.
Yeah. But see, what you can do is, like, you use the ActiveEye when people come over, or at nighttime, whatever. ActiveEye senses people. It sends a command to tell your front lights to turn on because it's just an infrared sensor. But the how you pick that up and runs a script where it just plays a barking dog wave file. It's really brilliant. It really is.
What happens when the dog keeps barking the same sound, you know? They're going to be like, hey, something's wrong here.
Well, you change it.
You got to get a hammer that goes and bangs up against the door. That's the key to
A shotgun. Make it sound like a shotgun's going on.
No, like the dog's jumping up against the door.
Is that your topic, Art?
What's that, the dog jumping up against the door? Yeah, well, absolutely.
What else you got for us?
Actually, it was going to be Hannah Montana Linux, but Dan's not here tonight. And
what a classic. That I didn't believe that when I saw that.
Well, that's... No, I didn't believe it either, but... No, just one quick thing. I was reading an article about the United States Postal Service is going open source with their tracking systems, and it's really, I mean, the article, I'll post the article in the chat, and people can look at it, but it's booming their tracking system. I mean, it's really making a big difference for them. And you can read the article because we don't have much time. But it's nice to see that the United States Postal Service is going open source. You know, Peter, how do I paste and copy here? You know, can you tell me?
Control C.
Well, you just stick that post-it note right in the middle of your forehead.
That's right, the post-it note.
Oh, man, you hear that?
And I didn't even use Control C, so kiss mine now.
But you use your bloody mouse, you bitch, Sheila. Not when you use menus.
That's right. And it's a wireless mouse, too. And I think it works by RF signal. Peter, Georgia, where is that?
He's telling me he's from Georgia.
Oh. Yeah, that's a... the article, I went through the article, and it's really, it's nice to see that even though Peter, I thought you'd enjoy reading this, if nobody else, but I really wanted Hannah Montana thing with Dan, but being he's not here, I can't do that.
Well, I want to know about this Hannah Montana distro.
What, the distro? You didn't see about it?
No.
Oh, hold on, let me...
Some bloke posted on Twitter. Who posted it? I can't remember his name.
Real?
Yeah,
oh, here's the link. There's the link, buddy, right there.
My daughter saw it. She wants it.
Yeah. According to, let's see here. According to, find out where I had the damn thing up here. It gives you what is in it. It's got a new KDM login screen, new splash screen, new icons. It has new wallpapers, a 20-second boot time. What else it got?
It's on Fedora or something?
No, it's on, I don't know. I thought it was on Debian.
Yeah, it's based on Kubuntu.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That'd be unusual based on a bloody distro on Ubuntu.
Yeah, it's on Kubuntu, yep. But,
so this is a remix of Kubuntu.
Absolutely, yeah, using all...
It's probably got a Hannah Montana bloody wallpaper.
Oh, yeah, you can see... if you look at your screenshots.
I wonder why they didn't just release this as a series of, like, themes on, like, KDE Look or something like that. I mean, why bother remixing it and stuff?
I don't know. You get a song with it, too. They got a song, too, so.
Oh, good gosh.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Peter, your daughter's going to have this.
She'll love it. 5216 posted on Twitter. Who the hell's 5216? That's worse than your name, 330.
I don't know. I had to laugh when I seen it, though. I mean, it was distinct.
Is Pegwell in the bin? Because if he's not, he's going back there after saying that.
I think Pegwell's downloading Hannah Montana Linux right now.
Yeah.
No, it's the number one distro for pedophiles.
Get in the bin.
Come on, she's too
put him in the bin.
Pegwell was going to go get something to drink.
I already got back from that. Then I offered everyone hookers and blow, and you know what?
That's it. You're banned for life. Get him out of here, Monster B.
He's banned.
Oh,
for life.
For hookers? It's in Australia. We have laws here, sir.
Life is 1 week in tit land.
That was rough, but he deserved it.
And IRC, you just said worth it.
All right. Any more Britney Spears distros or?
That pretty well wraps up the game, doesn't it?
Hey, I got a comment on this. Hannah Montana distro, as opposed to, putting it in a KDE Look or whatever repository, depends on your market audience. If you're putting this forth to a bunch of Windows users. In a distro, it's the only way that you're going to get it to them because they wouldn't know how to use a repository.
And it's also called an x86 Basic Edition, which really, slims it down. I mean, it's not slim. It's 681 megs. I mean, it's not a small distribution. But, of course, it has KDE in it, so.
It's going to be Kubuntu with the bloody wallpaper.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, What difference is it going to be?
I don't know, Peter. When you download it, you let us know.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to now.
You will. You got nothing to do.
Yeah, well, that's the point.
You can do all these distro checking out for us. Sheriff, is it all right if I go to the bathroom? Do I need permission for that?
No, you're excused. Did you have a hand up when you asked me?
Absolutely, both of them.
Okay, you're excused.
Thank you.
Have another ebook this week. It's called Ubuntu Pocket Guide and Reference. It's a free download. Throw the link in the IRC. I love these free ebooks. It's about 152 pages, 7 chapters.
Oh,
you can,
cool.
Yeah, you can also buy it too if you want to buy the printed version.
Hey, that gets put on every machine I put Ubuntu on for people.
That's a good idea.
That sets right on the desktop.
And do they actually read it or look at it, refer to it?
I tell them, you read that. If you still have questions, we'll call me, but read that first.
Yeah.
Must work. They don't call me.
So how much is the printed version?
Probably 14, 15 bucks. I mean, it's only got, 300 tips, it says. It can't be any more than 200, 300 pages.
It's $12 on Amazon.
Okay.
That's not bad. Nothing.
But that would be handy in a printed version.
It would be, yeah. O'Reilly does have a couple of pocket guides that are really good. Just nothing. I don't think there's anything specific for Ubuntu, but you know, just like Linux pocket guide and things like that. It's just the terminology and some more obscure commands that you might not remember off the top of your head. Those are pretty cool. The printed versions, I mean.
And I went to Barnes and Noble today and seen a Ubuntu user magazine. It's a brand new magazine out.
It's called Ubuntu User?
Yep.
Really?
The web address is ubuntu-user.com.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
I hope it hangs around.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's neat.
It was a very nice magazine. Some of the editors are writers in it. There's John Mad Dog Hall, John O'Bacon, and Marcel. He does the Cooking with Linux.
Yeah.
I think on Linux Journal.
Linux Journal, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of big names in there. Plus, they have a section in it for newbies. It's called the Discovery Guide. The
great.
Only thing is, with these magazines, they seem to be a little bit pricey. You know, it's $15.
Yeah, but you know, they
is
have that
pommy?
Disc with them, too, you know?
But is it an English magazine?
No, it's Linux New Media, which does, like, Linux Magazine.
Right, the expensive one.
Linux Pro. Yeah, and they have the discs with them. Which is cool because that way you don't have to bother downloading and that way you also know that your disk is probably good. I mean, you know, it's not sometimes when you burn it yourself, you know, there's something up with it. I don't know. Yeah, I like them. I don't mind spending that kind of money on these magazines. And it's the same if you get like, I don't know, there's like, you know, PC format or Mac something. There used to be one for Mac. I mean, they were pretty expensive because they had the disk with them and sometimes they're pretty big magazines, too. I don't know. I think a lot of people, computer geeks, I think, buy those things.
Okay, I have the price is $15 if you buy it at the newsstand. But if you get the year subscription, it's $39.95.
Nice.
And there's only four issues a year.
Is that all?
Yeah.
That's why it says it comes with an upgrade disc in that. I thought if they bring it out monthly, well, surely Ubuntu doesn't upgrade them monthly.
Yeah, I'm sure they've got updates and then probably whatever extra packages they're talking about, you know, just the .deb files for, you know, whatever software they happen to review that issue, I would imagine.
Did there used to be the online PDF Ubuntu magazine.
Yeah, Full
I can't
Circle.
Remember what sorry.
Full Circle.
Yeah, Full Circle. Is that still about?
No, I'm pretty sure it kind of died.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that's a pity, because that was a pretty good magazine. Like that Tux magazine. That was the other one that was available only through PDF, too.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry. Full Circle is around, I think.
Oh, you might be thinking of Tux magazine, then. They packed that in, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
I think they'd have an easier time if they did it now instead of when they did, because I think people would be okay with buying advertising now that... Back then, it was all still very, very new.
Yeah, that's true.
I say it looks like Full Circle is still around.
Yeah, latest one was June 28th, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Why I stopped reading that?
It must have gone away for a little while. I could have sworn it was gone for a little while. Maybe I'm thinking of that other one, though.
Yeah, another new magazine. Well, it's not new. I just found out about it a few weeks ago. It's BSD Magazine.
Yeah, BSD Magazine. I picked up the issue this month. It's not new then?
It looks like January 2008 it came out.
Oh, okay.
And it's one. It has 4 issues a year.
Yeah.
And their pricing is $15 if you buy it at the newsstand, but it's the same price. It's $39.95 a year for 4 issues. But you can also get the PDF version for $25 a year, which they had a freebie on there a few days ago, and I downloaded the latest one for free.
Which one was that? Is that the one with trying to find a month on this thing? With free BSD 7.1 in it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the one I got. And the month before that was PCBSD, no?
Yep, I just looked at that one today at Barnes & Noble. All
right.
Just browsed through it. And I think I'm gonna go ahead and try PCBSD. I'm going to give it a try and maybe tell you about it in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm probably going to try either PCBSD or FreeBSD. I've had some trouble in the past with the BSDs, trying to get them installed onto my Apple hardware, but I might just try like PCBSD on my triple E PC just for kicks, see how that runs.
Now on your Apple hardware, what type of video card is it, or video chip?
It's an Intel 9, or I don't know, I can tell you exactly, but you know, it's the Intel one, it's the shared graphic Intel thing. So I'm kind of surprised that it wouldn't be working, but I've got like, I've had nothing but X failures on like, I tried PCBSD, actually the one that you're, the latest one, I tried it on a MacBook, and it had trouble booting the installation disk, and then I tried to boot it up just after I finally did get it to install, and there were some weird X issues, and I can't get it to boot without X, so I'm going to have to install it on something, and either go in with a live CD and get rid of whatever kind of init script that is causing it to start X so that I can at least get into a text console, or I'm just going to try it on my triple EPC and see how it works.
Well, that's cool. Maybe we can talk about it in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I'll definitely try it on some computer, and yeah, we can discuss it.
Yeah, we don't have to make the whole show about it, but
yeah,
you know, we can just discuss it if anybody else wants to try it out.
So we're talking PCBSD, right? Not the FreeBSD 7.1.
Either one's fine.
Okay.
I tried FreeBSD, I don't know, a month or two ago.
Now, does that come after you install that? Does it actually install X, or you have to do that separately?
Do you have
or
to
not
do
X,
everything?
But like a desktop environment separately and stuff?
You have to do everything separately.
Okay. So, okay.
Yeah, just do you have the manual for FreeBSD? It's also on platypuslinux.org. It's the complete manual. And it's pretty good.
Oh, cool. All right.
All right, anything else before I wrap it up?
Nope.
Nothing? And I'm not going to ask Peter what he wants me to play for the song.
In my dear tractor.
Tonight's song is by Alan Mays, and the title is Night Like This. All right,
I get
good night.
The urge to kiss.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Sleep tight.
It can start with a glance from over a glass. A warm, sweet smile gives hope to romance. Love may open the door tonight. So long.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.